Hello and welcome back. This is Microsoft Ignite and Zed. And you have to say Zed here because they will slap you. Kiwis are like that. Before we talk to our guests, let me just tell you a little bit about what's coming up next on the show. We're going to be talking with our guest, obviously, and we'll introduce him shortly. We're going to be talking about Azure Machine Learning. I'm pretty sure Jennifer Marsman is going to talk about who survived the Titanic disaster using Azure ML. And then you're going to see Rickster CDN here with his IT pro guest that I will likely not understand very well. But before we get to that, we have a special guest today, Stephen Bunce. How you doing, buddy?
Thank you. I'm good, thank you.
So what is it that your company does?
So TrustPower is a power company, mm-hmm. But we also do phone and internet services. So traditionally just power, generating as well as retailing, adding gas, but now ISP, we offer telco and internet services. So we're the fourth largest ISP in New Zealand.
Fantastic.
And kind of biggest provider of fiber internet within our kind of Tauranga area.
So, okay, so I don't know anything about managing power. Can you give us a sense for how technically you have to do that and why it's kind of a hard thing?
I probably can't go into the details about how we generate
power.
You know, from a kind of technology side, from where I sit, is around how we deliver solutions to help our business and to, you know, keep the business running. And you know, how do we integrate our systems? How do we get the data from wind farms? What do we do with that data? And where do we need to kind of push it off into the markets?
So, what are some of the challenges that your business experiences that you need technology to solve? What are the challenges that your business has that you need technology to solve?
It's really fast paced. It's constantly changing. We have to keep up with the market demands, you know, particularly around the kind of internet and retail, and you know, it's a very competitive market. So the challenge is how do we keep moving in the right direction to actually deliver better solutions to our customers.
So specifically, is there, like, do you have to manage customers? Is it like there's some math behind the power generation that you have to manage? Is there something with ISPs? Like, I'm trying to find a solution that, for example, if a developer's watching, they'd be like, oh, we have a problem just like that. Yeah. What are some of the problems that you face, like, specifically?
Specifically around data integration, I would say, you know, a lot of what we do is kind of data flowing from different systems, into other markets. You know, how do we get that? Very disparate systems, they don't necessarily talk to each other that easily. So how do we get our systems to, you know, communicate well with one another? How do we get these multiple systems in a space for our users to be able to do what they need to do to service the customers?
I see. So let's talk about sort of the kind of, obviously we don't want to get into specifically what kind, but let's talk about sort of the types of data that you have and what are the challenges of sort of getting them to communicate with one another. What kind of data do you work with? Are you relational database, document database? You have a bunch of files sitting around?
All of the above.
Nice.
So, you know, a whole heap of kind of different file formats that we have to pick up a file from somewhere, and that could be through FTP. It could be streaming through a web service. Traditionally, it's been, you know, very relational databases that we work with, but we're starting now to think, you know, is that the right thing to do? For some of these huge data sets that we might be looking at, is logging the right place, for example, to be putting in a relational database? Should we be putting that in Document DB?
Right.
You know, NoSQL, how do we get the data in quickly and read it out again quickly? So there's better tools now and systems rather than just those relational databases.
So let's talk about sort of traditionally when we're talking about like people that generate power or ISPs, they've had sort of their own data centers to do stuff.
Yeah.
Have you found that migrating to the cloud has been a challenge? Is this something that you're looking at doing? Is this something that's been helping?
So one of the things we've done recently is kind of go through a project, which we call Blue Sky, and it was about migrating all our applications to Azure. Driven partly by us moving to a new head office. So the new building didn't have a data center, so
right.
Very small footprint of IT equipment. So data centers split across Auckland and Wellington, and then kind of all our .NET stack pretty much sitting now in Azure.
I see. And so when most of the stuff that you build, was it all .NET? Do you have sort of a hybrid environment? What were the challenges that you saw in moving to the cloud?
It's a hybrid environment. The challenges are really around what understanding what applications we have. We started off with over 200. You know, what's being used? Is it still relevant? Can we consolidate it, retire it? Can we be looking at software as a service to replace some of those things?
Right.
a real driver was to get it up and as high as in the stack as possible. So, you know, the majority of what we've moved is now sitting in platform as a service.
I see.
We're looking at that serverless technology so we don't have to actually have to maintain servers, patching, etc.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the solutions that you've used within Azure, because it looks like your project, was it called Blue Sky?
Blue Sky.
Blue Sky was a sort of a process of moving all of your applications, some of your applications to the cloud?
So the majority, I would say, not all. Some, we had legacy stuff that we it wouldn't have been suitable to kind of move up there for security or data reasons.
Right. And so let's talk about sort of like the whole process of migrating. Now these are developers that are watching. Again, if you have any questions, feel free to submit them below and we'll ask them here to Steven. Tell us about sort of an application, how, because a lot of people right now are in this situation where they're like, yeah, we should do the cloud.
Yeah.
But it feels like it's this kind of mountain you got to climb up and you're kind of at the top already of the mountain looking down. What would you say to those that are climbing up the mountain and moving things, migrating to the cloud? What's the process that you went through? And be as detailed as you can, because developers, you know, if we get a little too markety, like our bits flip. We want to know, like, what do I really have to do? What do I have to think about?
Yeah, I mean, the key thing for us in our apps was making sure they were on a consistent platform. So we're looking at, you know, they weren't all on the same version of the .NET framework. So the first thing we had to do was make sure we upgrade them all so to a consistent framework version. Some of the, you know, over time we do things a different, slightly different ways. So logging, error handling, that kind of stuff. So we created a whole bunch of new Git packages that would actually, that we just apply to all our applications that would then give a consistent way, a method of the coding. And once we defined those, it was just a matter of running through a process, each and every application, applying those new Git packages, updating the frameworks, you know, going through all your existing kind of versions of NuGet packages. It could be Entity Framework or New Relic, you know, making sure they're all up to the very latest versions to make sure that they're kind of fit for purpose going forward.
So it feels like there was some pre-work that you needed to do in order to move to the cloud. The first thing you mentioned was you need to make sure everything was sort of in a homogeneous kind of state.
Yep.
Version-wise. Was there, what other planning was involved in actually moving to the cloud in this Blue Sky project?
So there was a lot of planning, but we made a real big mistake of it would be seamless. So mm-hmm. our users kind of wouldn't necessarily know what we were doing behind the scenes. That was a pretty bad mistake. You know,
right.
People generally notice when you're touching every piece of your IT equipment, hardware and software. So just keep people informed. But running through that process, you know, it was quite well defined. We practiced it, we tweaked it and refined it as we went through the process of transforming them. But the key thing is around that deployment and automation. Right? We spent quite a bit of time getting that right. So it's about creating a repeatable process, right? So we need to be able to deploy the app. We need to, you know, we might have done some testing and found an issue, so we need to pull it back down, make changes, redeploy it. You have to do that stuff manually all the time, really time consuming, and we would never have, you know, got through the project.
So when we're talking about sort of the pre-work that you were doing, because you started getting into sort of the migration,
yep.
Was there some things that you missed in the pre-work that in hindsight you're thinking, boy, you know, if we would have done this or done that, it would have made sort of the transition a lot better?
Sometimes we would have gone down a certain path and then changed our mind later, so we had to redo it. Mm-hmm. Azure changes all the time. There's new features, you know, coming along. App service environment wasn't around when we started, so we'd gone down a certain path to the environments we deploy to. And I know I'm getting back into the deployment, but it's that kind of, you can only do so much pre-work when there's other things and new features coming along.
If you would say, for when it comes to the sort of laying the groundwork for getting things ready to migrate, what would be sort of the number one, number two thing? Make sure you do this. If you don't do anything else, do this, oh, and this too.
Make sure you understand your environment and your applications and how people are using them.
Yeah.
Because you'd be really surprised that, you know, within IT and within development, we may have developed an application, but how the user's actually using that application may be very different.
I see. I bet, was there one thing where you're like, boy, I didn't think they were going to use that? I mean, why would you use it that like that? Well, was there a surprise like that that hit you?
I mean, there probably was, but I can't think of one right now. There were certainly some kind of things that we just didn't think were being used at all.
Uh-huh.
That's, Yeah, I can't think of something, but there were certainly instances that you were kind of like, why are they doing that?
And did that affect sort of how you migrated this application to the cloud? Because you're like, wait, they took away the use case that we're using that no one thought of. Did that happen as well?
Yep, it can be.
Awesome. So we have a question coming in. How did EA principles support the Blue Sky project? How did they apply them on a day-to-day basis? So why don't you explain what EA principles are for those that are watching?
So enterprise architecture principles. So, and that includes, you know, what are our principles about how we host our applications, where they are, what are the frameworks and patterns that we actually use? So, and that includes things like dev standards and frameworks as well. So you kind of have those in place, and this is what we do right now. Like, but when you're going through a migration project, you kind of have to review those and say, is that still valid? Does that still work?
Right.
So yes, that's our principle, but do we need to adjust that? And particularly around dev standards, I mean, it's constantly evolving. You know, we can create documentation, but you'd always be updating it. So there's a whole heap of kind of policies and things that we had to be mindful of to make sure that we're adhering to. You know, data security and
right.
kind of things like that.
This is good stuff because, I mean, I've made demoware for like the last 10 years of my career, right? I write a lot of code, but it's never like stuff that's been moved over. I do have one piece of software that's been living for like 7 years, and they don't call me, which means it's good. So I'm really excited to hear from you because you're actually taking software from like its prior use into this new cloud use.
Yeah.
And there's tons of learnings that I feel like I want to just pull out of you so people that are watching do that. Okay, so let's move on now. We talked a lot about the pre-work. We talked about some things that you don't need, you can't forget about. Let's talk about sort of this process of, okay, I think we've planned enough. Let's see, what are all the warts that started to happen when you started to sort of do the migration?
What are the
warts? Like the ugly parts.
The ugly parts.
We want to hear about the ugly parts.
The ugly
okay.
parts.
Yeah.
It was all so new. You know, we touched every single piece of equipment, networking, everything. So, you know, the ugly parts were really kind of getting those kind of key components right. You know, around networking, network security. Deployments, testing them, and making sure they're actually working. There was a lot of not necessarily painful, but just, you know, quite time consuming to kind of get those things right.
Was there like, were you literally like unplugging machines and getting rid of them kind of thing? I mean, was that, I mean.
That came later. Uh-huh. So, you know, we were moving buildings. So there was a process to move things into the new data centers and into Azure. And then there was a project later on to actually just go through and start unplugging stuff. And that was interesting because things that you think were no longer being used because everything has moved and you start unplugging things and something stops working.
Oh my goodness.
So we had some instances, what's that over there? Let's pull that out and a few things stop. So
how many applications overall? I mean, because this feels like fairly complicated. I mean, was this something that happened over a period of months, years?
So from start to end was under 2 years, but a lot of that initial kind of year was just about discussions, planning, talking to partners. By the time we actually started the project and the migrations, was about 8-9 months.
Okay, so let's talk about sort of the DevOps process. DevOps is kind of like this interesting new phrase that nobody knows quite what it means.
And it then means when you're different things to different people. So
what does it mean to you now that you've actually done it? I mean, it feels like you would have had to sort of operationalize a lot of the deployments because if something goes wrong, and you're relying on the cloud, you got to be able to push it out fast. Tell me about what DevOps means to you, someone that's actually had to do something.
It's, you know, one of the things that I often get tasked with is around speed of delivery.
Right.
We need to get stuff done quickly, and that's what DevOps means to me. I need to be able to deploy software, write software, build software. It all has to be seamless and fast and automated.
Right.
So that's what it means to me. How do we script these things out so we can just run that script and we have the confidence, we know it's going to work, and it's repeatable.
So you have that sort of middle process of your dev all the way to the deployment. Can you tell me, I've heard the mantra that DevOps is people, process, and products. Can you tell me who your people were, what your process was, and what products to use? I mean, because like I know it's kind of squishy, but I want to know how you did it, right?
So, well, people is the development team.
Sure.
The process, That's a kind of tricky one.
I know. I feel like I hear about this stuff all the time, and you've done this, and I want to hear, like, there's got to be some gold goodness in there of how you actually did this. So people that are like, I want to be able to do this, what they want to learn from you. So I know it's going to be squishy, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, templates, you know, PowerShell, ARM, you know, there's a whole heap of resources out there that somebody else has done. So taking some of those components and actually suit them to us. So,
sure.
Yeah, process of deployments or the process of DevOps is kind of really hard to sit here and explain.
Well, there had to be a process where you set, like, there's got to be a framework that you have. I mean, does every single project, because how many projects did you say there were, like 200?
Applications. Yep, so that was probably, I think we did about 90 into Azure in the end.
90. So yep. So each one of those projects or programs, did they have their own way of getting stuff out? Or did you have sort of a framework that all of them adhered to?
So the majority had a framework around them and a kind of similar process. So. We use Bitbucket for source control. We use AppVeyor for our build.
I see.
And then we use, so AppVeyor kind of build and deploy, and then we've got PowerShell scripts as well to actually run further configurations.
So you have a place to store your code. You have a place to do the continuous sort of build, mm-hmm. and then you have this sort of PowerShell glue all the way in the middle,
yep.
to get things greased over,
yep.
the top. Okay, so let's talk a little bit now about sort of the things that you use in the cloud. The products or services that you use and why you chose those ones and how they're doing, right? We're developers, right? You can tell me, well, we love this, but this we wish could be better. It's okay. So let's talk about sort of the range of services that you're using,
yep.
in Azure and why you chose them. And it feels like if you've been doing this for 18 months to 2 years, things have considerably changed even whilst you were migrating, correct?
Yep.
So let's talk about sort of the services.
Yeah, John in my team calls this his toy box.
I see.
So, you know, there's heaps of services there, but which ones do we use? And so it's all about kind of the platform, right? So we do have some infrastructure as a service, mm-hmm. Servers, because the applications that are running in IIS, they need to be publicly accessible, but they're not really suitable for the platform.
I see.
So the majority are sitting in app service. So app service environments, they're ASP.NET. Web applications.
I see.
But we're starting to look more like into the serverless technologies, so logic apps for our workflows, you know, being able to hook our APIs together in a kind of workflow, including our, we use a lot of service bus queuing and topics,
mm-hmm.
and we're just starting to get into the functions.
Interesting. So let's start with sort of the before that. There had to have been, out of the 90 applications or programs, something that quite didn't fit. What did you do with those? Like, I mean, because it, like, you might have had some special COM object in the back, or you might have had some other thing. What did you do with those? Did you do something in the pre-work? Did you just put them into something else? How did you do that?
So that could have been in the pre-work. So we could have refactored the code, you know, created another kind of NuGet package to work our way around that. For some of the kind of older apps, it would have been just too hard and taken too long. So they were re-hosted in our data centers on IIS rather than into Azure.
I see. So you had some things that just were like, well, this has got to stay. Did you transfer anything to sort of Azure VMs? Was that something that was ever something discussed? Was it something that you do, or does it work? Tell us about that.
Yep. So we've recently done that with our Trustpower website.
Okay.
So that's all hosted on Sitecore and Azure VMs,
and
the whole environment, and that includes, you know, SQL always on. The Sitecore environments, I think there's probably about 6 or 7 servers for the whole thing, and that's fully automated scripting.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so the whole environment we can redeploy in kind of about 90 minutes.
Is this something that you do with ARM templates, or
yep.
how do you?
Yep.
Why don't you describe ARM templates for those that may not know about them, and then why you may or may not like them? It seems like they actually are helpful too.
Yeah, I mean, the ARM templates in the simplest form is just a template based in JSON for you to define what you're trying to create. So, and then running PowerShell scripts to actually create that environment.
And it could be any environment.
It could be anything. So we're running it for VMs, and it the template will create the VM a certain size, it will create the network, it will create every single component that the machine requires, including right. storage. And then it will deploy, well, it'll install the Sitecore components, and then it will deploy our code into that environment. Oh, so that's all through the ARM template.
See, and here is where my misunderstanding, and help me if I'm incorrect here. I thought the ARM template was it stands for Azure Resource Manager template.
Yeah.
The ARM template just defines sort of the infrastructure. Are you telling me that you can also define sort of the applications that get pulled into it?
So whether we have defined that through the kind of PowerShell, but we have defined that in JSON kind of objects within our templates.
I see. And then PowerShell sort of takes that and runs with it.
Yep. And that's all kind of managed in source control and Visual Studio.
So you can not only, you're telling me you can not only sort of, because I understand source control, if there's a change made to code, I can see, oh, that's what broke it. You're saying that now with ARM templates, you make a change in infrastructure,
yep.
you'll see that change as well yep. and the effect that it has.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit more about app service. Tell us about, you mentioned web apps, logic apps, and then we'll get into sort of the data backing structures that you talk about. Tell me about web apps and why it was something you chose to use and how's it working out?
Well, we chose it because our plan was to get as high as the stack as possible, right? It's about using that platform.
Right.
I don't want to kind of manage servers
yeah.
and IIS. I just want to deploy my app there and not have to worry about it.
Right.
The bits we have to worry about are scaling and scaling up and out. That's really what we want to worry about. I don't want to worry about kind of looking after IIS.
What was it like to deploy your app to a web app the first time? Was it something you were expecting to be difficult? Was it difficult? What was it like?
We've been doing it for quite a while. So, this project was to migrate the majority of our apps, but we already had some apps running. So we kind of knew the kind of process and what we were doing and how to kind of do that. But we weren't using things like ARM templates at that point. So that was the whole new learning curve.
The ARM templates also have the ability to manage sort of higher up the stack, like web apps and logic apps, etc. ARM templates.
ARM templates, I'm not sure we're using it for kind of the web apps.
Okay, yep. Let's talk about logic apps. For those that don't know what it is, give us sort of an overview of what they are and then how you're using them.
It's kind of a workflow for your APIs. It's in the kind of simplest form. Receiving data in, you may need to kind of have some logic conditions to determine where to push that data to.
Okay.
So you can have listeners, HTTP listeners, or WCF listeners.
Sure.
There's connectors, so you can connect things to Facebook, Twitter, SQL. There's heaps of them. And once you get that data in, you can kind of do some logic around. Where does that data need to go? What needs to happen to it next? So we've actually built up quite a big use case for that. So we had a kind of black box solution that was not performing. It was causing the business quite a bit of headache.
Oh no.
A decision was made to kind of, we had to do something about it, right? What can we do and what can we do quickly?
Right.
So something that originally took about 3 to 6 months to implement, we replaced it within 2 to 3 weeks using Logic.
Two
apps.
To 3 weeks?
Yeah.
Okay, that was way too fast. You gotta tell us. There's got to be some secret magic sauce, because I feel like I'm finally uncovered this gold nugget of here's 6 months or 3 weeks, right? If you were to give that to any business guy or gal, she'd be like, yeah, let's do the 3 weeks. So you got to tell us. Can you give us a little bit more?
It was creating the APIs. And then just hooking those into the kind of workflow that it needed to process that data.
That's it. There's got to be more than that, right?
There was some business process stuff that was done outside of Salesforce, in Salesforce, but it worked really well. And in that time frame, because there was a cross-functional team, so the whole team, business and development, just coming together to actually just get that kind of done.
That's amazing. And so you took something that was probably very large,
yep.
and what you did is, did you separate it into the little pieces, or was there a lot of work that you had to do just to move it? I mean, because look, I mean, I'm a dev. If I say, yeah, it'll take an afternoon, it means it will, if I say it'll take a half hour, that means it'll take the morning for me to look at Stack Overflow, the afternoon to get my drink, right? And then I'm going to spend some time looking at the cat video, and then I'm going to look at it for a little while, and that half hour turns into the day. When you say 2 to 3 weeks, do you mean like literally or yep. like dev?
No, literally.
That's amazing. So can you give us, I know you, I don't want you to tell us exactly what it, but can you give us a sense of an of a sort of a use case where everyone that's watching can also do that? Give us a, like a use case, like here's a process. Because that's I'm trying to understand sort of the logic apps
yeah.
And how they do that.
Just have to think of a use case. So, you gotta remember I'm the management, so I don't.
Yeah, you weren't really good at that. Like, I don't know, they just turn up
and they do it.
So would you say that logic apps, like does data come into one side and then a lot of stuff happens and then it comes out? I mean, yeah. is that what it is? I'm trying to understand how you would set this
so
up.
You're getting one of the use cases around SMS messaging. So we receive a message from a customer to say they need some information from us, and we receive that in through the logic app listener. We then read that message, and it may have their account number in.
Right.
So we have to go away and call an API to validate that account number. Or we need to say, yes, it's valid. We're going to move that onto the next stage of the workflow, and we're going to go and look up some other information. And then we're going to return that to the customer. If it's not a valid account number, or we can't validate it, or there's some other error, then we push another message back.
I see. So beforehand, you would have this tremendously large state machine that you would have to maintain.
Yep.
And you're saying that the logic app allows you to sort of start with this thing on the left or the right, depending on where you how you read.
Yep.
Gets to this state, and you're like, "Oh, do this. Whoop, go here or go here," kind
yep.
of thing.
Yep.
And then tell me about what if something in the middle of your process changes? How do you fix that? Is that a hard thing to change?
No, I mean we're updating things all the time. You know, it's just another thing that we can kind of manage through our standard code management.
That's awesome. And so we've talked about a lot of things. We're kind of about 2 minutes left, maybe 1 minute left. We've talked sort of about the process, your blue sky of moving things. You talked about sort of some enterprise architecture process, the preparation. You talked about the DevOps thing. And now you've talked about sort of web apps, logic apps. How would you summarize sort of this whole process for those that are thinking, boy, I really want to do that, but I'm feeling a little trepidation. How would you sort of
I encourage my team to just challenge the way we think and work and develop and deliver solutions. So just think outside the square. Don't be afraid to try something completely new. We're often, you know, when we start, when we get a problem and we need to solve that through software, the first thing we'll look at is, you know, it's not about how we've always done something. What can we use within Azure and just do something different.
You know? I love it. This is amazing, amazing advice for someone that's done it. We have a lot of people that talk about how things should be done, but they've actually done it. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. Thanks so much for watching. And I think next we have Jennifer Marsman talking about Azure ML. We're going to go to that.